Man, I've got certain information, all right? Certain things have come to light, and, you know, has it ever occurred to you that instead of, you know, running around blaming me, you know, given the nature of all this new shit, you know, this could be a lot more complex. I mean, it's not just, it might not be just such a simple, you know?
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
5, 4, 3, 2,
Weekly Dose, prescribed by Comic Book Therapy.
Nothing attracts me more than a confused woman doing research on comics she's trying to be interested in. Don't worry, my love. I've done all the research you need. Shift your interest towards me. What's looking good to you, delicious? I asked, sounding so hungry to let her know only she could satisfy my desire. What? She replied, her green eyes pierced into mine, rendering me into a trance. Could she be from Oa? I love her to show me her might. I noticed you fumbling over some books. Mind if I help you? I leaned over, smiling provocatively with my eyes staring back into hers. She looked away uncomfortably, then looked right back into mine. My friend gave me a list of comics to read, she said. So far, I do not like the titles he's given me. I can definitely be the fix you need, I said. Take a walk with me. I'll show you all you need, including a life with me. She stood there hesitantly, taking a deep breath, and then decided to follow me. I knew my charm wouldn't fail. You look like a domino kind of woman, looking so dangerous yet elegant, I whispered. Here's Cable and the X-Force. Cable's back with a new team formed on a run from Uncanny Avengers. Things went boom, 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 baby. Love is a battlefield. She had this cute, lost look on her face, but I suppose she interested. Here's Exo Man of War, number 8 from Valiant Comics. Badass assassin Ninjak and Exo form an unlikely alliance to bring a fight to the Vine, who are planning to wipe out the human population. Kind of like how a creeper and a scarecrow girl form an alliance to get some comics, she quips. Baby, I like it when you're comical, I say, smiling. Here's a few others I'll leave you begging for more. Then I showed her my saga, number 8, which mirrored our love for each other. Masks, number 2. Django Unchained, if she liked whips. And Nightwing, number 15. A bright smile glows on her face, showcasing her lovely bone structure. Thanks. I gotta go now, but I appreciate the comics you suggested me. Wait, my love. You want to go out for ice cream or something? I asked. Ha! Are you serious? She then fades away from my thoughts, my eyes, and my heart. Broken and broke again. That is the Comic Book Shop Blues. Hello out there, listeners. Everybody just tuning in, or you probably stumbled onto our podcast by accident. You can't leave now. This is it. This is what you've been looking for. Welcome to the Weekly Dose. I am your host, Muy Mariano, and we have a bunch of people who are also consultants, therapists, whoever else they want to be when they want to be when they grow up. So I'll go ahead and give you the listener rundown for who are going to be our correspondents for today's show. We have Witty.
Sir Witty. Hello, ladies.
We have Sheebs.
Hi.
We have Pity.
Eat alive.
And we have Norwood.
Hello.
I know it's been a pretty busy week so far, whatnot, but hey, we're soon gonna get right to the program, talking about our comics, talking about our movies, talking about each other, making love to each other, doing everything together. You know, this is how we are. We're a family here. We love each other that much, okay? That's what we do.
We like to keep it in the family.
Oh, yes, we do. Multiply. Ratify. So with this, we want to go ahead and start things off with As Recommended by Witty.
Witty recommends.
Hello, my lovelies. This week's recommended book comes from Marvel, for a change.
You didn't give me a chance to say, hey, gosh.
Hey, shut up. Spider-Man Blue by Jeff Loeb with art by Tim Sale. This is one of my favorite teams in comics. They're the creators of Batman The Long Halloween, which I'll get around to talking about one of these days. Spider-Man Blue is a retelling of how Peter Parker and Gwen Stacy fell in love. And say aw now, Woody.
Aww.
Say it like Cleveland.
Aww.
Peter serves as narrator in the present, using the storytelling device of an old tape recorder to speak to Gwen on Valentine's Day, which is the day he marks as for her death. The six-issue series, which came out in 2002, depicts the events from The Amazing Spider-Man, Volume 1, number 43 through 48. Peter, who is in college and still used to being thought of as a nerd, suddenly attracts the interest of both Gwen Stacy and Mary Jane. Can I get a hallelujah?
Hallelujah!
Hallelujah!
Preach!
And he becomes friends and roommates with the Green Goblin's son, Harry. To complicate his life even further, he is attacked on a daily basis by various enemies, and he's studied from the shadows by the mastermind behind these attacks. I really love this book. Loeb does a really great job of balancing all the sappy emotional crap, all the narration with the classic 60s Spider-Man fun. Each issue has action, adventure, and some insight into Peter's feelings about that time of his life. And I know a lot of people find those college days to be pretty much the best time for Spider-Man. You know Tim Sale at all, you know what to expect from the art in this book. It's actually a fact that Tim Sale's art is the cure for seeing any Greg Land comics. It's absolutely beautiful. And it feels very much of the time period. The colors by Steve Ficcalato. Can I get some help there? No? Okay.
Colocosaurus?
Not important.
Tomato?
Some point we can
wear.
His colors feel both cartoony and simple, yet some scenes they give great realistic and moody atmosphere. At a time like this, when Amazing Spider-Man is coming to an end at issue 700, and the so-called Superior Spider-Man, fuck you, his debut, this book will remind everyone why you love Peter Parker in the first place. And wash the bad taste out of your mouth left by all this modern nonsense. You hear me, Quesada? Quesadilla? Do yourself... and pick up a copy of Spider-Man Blue today. Fight the fucking power, and God bless America.
comic book time.
I will say that the recommendation for masks, number one, was awesome.
Yes. Yes, it was.
And so was Cable and X-Force.
I told you, dude, it was really good for number one.
Yeah. And I'm not, like, a huge Cable fan, either.
Me neither. I don't even like X-Men that great. So,
no, I don't either.
To pick up like that, and I'm like, oh, yeah, this is actually good. Actually, something... The other ones are really slow, and just nothing ever happens. It's too much build-up for...
Yeah,
you know,
I only picked up, I picked up Cable and X-Force, Masks, number 2 and 3, Deadpool, which, like, it's good, but it's not as good as the older Deadpool stuff.
Yeah.
I found myself laughing a lot more when it was, you know, way back in the day, like 2009, 2008, stuff like that, but this one's just, it's trying too hard to be funny.
It's either that, or I'm thinking that they're just, like, the thing is the people higher up that are trying to, like, let Brian Posehn know what to write specifically. You know, not in a sense for them having free reign, because Brian Posehn's a pretty funny dude.
Yeah, he really is, and that's why I was a little bit let down by Deadpool. Like, it's still violent, and it's still awesome, but it's not as funny anymore.
I don't know, maybe they'll pick it up somehow.
And I did pick up Avengers number one. Not Uncanny Avengers, because Woody said that was boring as shit, so... Avengers number one was... I mean, it was kind of confusing, because I don't really know what's going on with...
Exactly. It was confusing as shit.
Mm.
It was really confusing. See, I thought I was the only one. I mean, every time I asked somebody, they're like, yeah, man, I get it. And I'm like, you liar. You're a freaking liar, man.
I don't understand it at all. It's like, I get that they're sending these things to Earth to try and, I don't know, recreate evolution or some bullshit like that, yeah. But it's...
I'll tell you what happened. I had to read it like 20 times. The ex-Nihilist guy, he bombs Mars, and he's terraforming Mars to recreate a better, perfect human race in his, whatever his image is. So he's gonna do away with the human race after, I guess, he starts his race. And I guess, you know, the Avengers, the movie Avengers, basically, they got, like, what can Black Widow do on Mars? But anyways, they go to...
Nothing.
They go to Mars to try to stop them, I guess. And it seemed like there's supposed to be a backstory to it that we don't know, but it's just like in the first two pages they explain it, and it's really confusing how they go about explaining it. And then, you know, he sends, like, Steve back to planet Earth, and I guess he expects him to die, because, I mean, it was confusing, that part. His ship just, like, it just, like, disappeared around him. I guess it just burned up around him, and he just, like, landed on the, rolled on the ground like he was okay, which was kind of weird. But then he brought together a new initiative that Tony Stark put together at the end of the last run of Avengers. I don't remember what number that is. Avengers 33 or something like that. Anyways, then he put it together, and that's when all those new Avengers are coming in. Which I guess one of them is supposed to be Superior Spider-Man.
That's confusing.
Yeah, we just see him swinging in the background, but the rest of them, I don't even know. I saw Captain Universe is in there. And some of the other ones, unless they got new costumes, I don't know who they are at all.
I don't like this whole Doc Ock is Spider-Man thing.
Nope.
And I don't like that that's going to be the status quo. That's completely bullshit.
Yeah, then we're going to kind of sit there and say that Peter Parker's subconscious and his memories kind of take a hold of his body and intellect.
Well, that's what my theory is. Because he has Peter Parker's memories, and he's in Peter Parker's body, that Peter Parker's memories will eventually override Dr. Octopus. And he'll just be Peter Parker again, like nothing happened. But then, truly, you know, we would know that he's really not Peter Parker. It's a cop-out, I think. I mean, I could see him maybe if they did, like, the Batman Beyond, Return of the Joker, and it was like a chip in the back of his head or something. You know, that would be okay. I'd be fine with that. Because, you know, he's still
Yeah.
Okay, did somebody just unzip their pants?
Somebody said,
sorry.
I smell sausage.
Dang, boy.
Snagma.
I told Super Tika about the whole Spider-Man Doc Ock thing, and she doesn't know anything about comics. She's just like, that's stupid, I don't like that. Spider-Man is Peter Parker.
I was telling people I didn't even know. I was like, this just pisses me off. And they're like, okay. who are you? What's your name?
No, I'm pissed about it too, by the way.
Is there somebody I can call for you?
Have you guys heard anything about the new Thunderbolts, or is it even out yet?
Oh, it's out.
Oh, it is. It's out. It's pretty crappy.
It tricked me, dude. The cover art was awesome. I didn't even, bother looking in it, and then it was Steve Hill.
It's so bad.
It is horrible. Everybody looks like Punisher.
Yes.
Story is just horrible. General Thunderbolt Ross is recruiting the new Thunderbolts team. So he goes, it's like a montage of people he's going through to recruit for the team. And he starts off with Venom, Flash Thompson, which shouldn't be a problem because he's in the military anyways. But in the second issue, they make it seem like there's a problem between the two. But everybody looks the same. Something about the way he does side profile their faces, it doesn't look right. I don't know what it is. Sheeps probably knows more about that stuff. You know, have to. You're not even listening.
I know.
They have the side profile, the way he does the faces of a side profile isn't right with the anatomy wise.
Who's the other Spider-Man they have going now? Like that red one. Isn't he supposed to be a clone or something?
Yeah, that's Kane Parker. I actually liked the first couple issues of Scarlet Spider that I had. It's well worth reading, but since I hadn't been to the comic book store, I'm a little bit lost on what's going on.
Maybe they'll just have him play a part in turning back to Spider-Man or something.
That would be a good idea.
Isn't Kane in Arizona or somewhere?
Texas. He's in Houston, Texas.
Yeah.
Has anybody read any of the new X-Men?
No. I read all new X-Men 1 and 2. I didn't read the third one.
I got the first issue, and I know, Nuck was, going off on it, but I'm, I didn't really find it that interesting, to be honest. I don't know.
It's the art is what got me. It's the only thing that draws me in.
Yeah. But story-wise, it's just, I don't know, seemed a little lame because Beast goes back in the past and has to bring the original five to stop Cyclops. It was weird.
I heard about that.
There's time travel in it already.
Yeah, the first issue was just all about time travel. I don't know. At least the Beast looks good now, the way they have him designed. It's back to his, it's not that stupid cat design.
Well, he's supposed to be going through, another... phase in his whatchamacallit?
Evolution.
Yes, thank you.
I think my most disappointed book is Captain America. You know,
Romita.
Yeah. I mean, even the story wise, it's just stupid.
Isn't Rick Remender writing the story?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. I was supposed to. That's one of the only things that have me left clung into my hope for the actual book itself, besides his art. And that's kind of sad to hear that the story kind of is just like it too.
Yeah. It's really the art, but it doesn't help the story at all.
I've said for years, Romita just needs to stop. stick with doing kick ass. Stick with doing whatever Mark Millar wants you to write or draw, and just leave the good stuff alone.
I mean, does he think because his dad was awesome, that thinks he's awesome to me? He's
probably.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even nowhere near his dad's work at all.
Stephen Hawking could draw a better Captain America than John Romita.
right, now it's time for another segment of the podcast, Titties Bitties.
This is Titties Bitties, putting it on ya.
Titty, for your bitties, for your topic, it is Total Recall. How did you feel about the movie?
Shit.
That was Titties Bitties, yeah.
All right, thank you, Titty, for your segment of Titty's Vitties of Total Recall. Boy, that movie was such a disappointment.
Be warned, here there be rumors.
All right, we're going to go into our next little topic. We have a rumor has it.
Rumor has it.
We got that about the Justice League, about the possible storyline for this film. Pretty much last week, from Latino Review, a guy named El Mayimbe had pretty much claimed that he had a major scoop about the backstory and the outline for the Justice League. So, drums please. He says the villain is Darkseid and it's also going to be taking place at Apocalypse. Yeah, he said the story is going to be inspired from Jerry Conway's Crisis on New Genesis, Apocalypse Now, and Darkseid Rising. So, within those comics, though, which is also interesting, is that the Justice Society is also in it. So, could it be false? It's possible. But the story is going to be taking place where Darkseid attempts to blast Earth out of his radius to put Apocalypse in his place. So we already know that DC is trying to have their major thing and trying to get their major universe set up by having a Justice League movie first before they branch off into more of their solo films. So as far as for them facing Darkseid early on, like, do you guys think that the information is credible?
I don't think it is.
Probably not.
I think it's way too early to tell when, I mean, seriously, it's way too early to tell.
I think if it is, doesn't mean it'll actually come to pass, just like all the other DC movie stuff we've heard.
Yeah.
Without these characters established already, I think it would be a mistake to throw Darkseid in there and ruin any, like, future chance of a real good Justice League movie, because I just think it's a mistake to throw him in there first. Yeah. Like, who's left?
Yeah.
After you do your big guy first. You know, I understand the comics, you know, the New 52, Darkseid is what brought them together, but, you know, this is not a comic book, this is a movie, and you can't just throw Batman in there trying to beat a god. You know, like, how's that going to translate in this kind of, I don't know, I guess I want to say realistic kind of world that, you know, even the new Man of Steel, to an extent, is kind of that realistic type thing they're trying to do with it.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, in that world, Batman wouldn't be able to beat Darkseid. So, I think they will go with somebody else a little bit lower key on that one. And then maybe, you know, after a while they've been together, you know, they know their strengths. Then, yeah, you know, Batman won't be facing Darkseid, you know, trying to punch him in the face, you know.
I think the scale would be too big for the movie, just to go to have already all the Justice League members together. But like I said, even with, like, within the story, they've generally first faced against the Justice Society, so to go to have that many heroes on screen at once, you know, of course, it's not going to confuse, or, you know, the pretty much, like, you know, the regular comic bookers who reads and they're like, yeah, I know these characters, but yet to the general audience, they're going to be like, wait, who's that? I'm like, what's going on? Like, it's going to be a lot of confusion, like you've already said, but I don't know, like you said, I think it is a bit too large of a scale to try to tackle, especially to be able to have him as the main villain in its first ensemble film. But yeah, it's like, it's going to be real difficult because you already have the Dark Knight trilogy already, you know, concluding, and you already have the Man of Steel that's already about to begin, but you gotta have a solo movie like, you know, like Diana, aka Wonder Woman,
you know, and Flash, and all these different people. I mean, Green Lantern kind of already failed as it is, sadly, but it's like,
people know who he is.
Yeah, people know who he is. Like, they have the names, but there's also characters that people don't know off the bat, even though in comic book mainstream, they're very well known and very, their names are really big out there, but to the general audience, it's not huge. Like, when you think of DC, people automatically think of, you know, Batman, Superman, you know, because they've been the main heroes on screen. You know, their incarnations have been plastered everywhere, cartoons, TV movies, you know, shows and so forth. And like, they're like the main people, but as far as for everyone else, you've already had, you know, Wonder Woman pilot. But even with that, these people still need to know who the heroes are in solo films. I think that's what, you know, Marvel did pretty good. The fact that even though, in a sense, some movies kind of lost quality because they were obviously trying to make them all connect, leading to the Avengers, but they still able to have like at least the core team.
Mm-hmm.
And have them established before they went into their ensemble film. You know, I think that's what needs to be done over with DC and their movies that they're trying to plan, is able to have their characters, but yet of course, since the big success of Avengers, it's like they're rushing. I don't know.
I think it could work for them to start with a Justice League movie, but they can't take a bunch of time for a big villain and actually pay him off like Darkseid. I mean, they're going to have to introduce quite a few characters.
Yeah. It's going to be a lot of explanations, a lot of stories about, and also a lot of ground to cover with these characters and how they would mesh well with one another, how they would meet up. You know, of course, everybody wants to see Aquaman. True story.
Well, you know, the thing about it is the Justice League movie period, you know, you're having the Superman, they're going to establish his character in the new Man of Steel movie. Mm-hmm. And he, the way Snyder's going to present him is just kind of like, you know, depending on how he does it, you know, he's real fragile, you know, character as far as like personally. He's going to take, you know, oh, I'm an alien, you know, I'm a human. Well, that story, that core story, how's that going to translate in the Justice League movie when it's going to be straightforward action or whatever? Like, how can they, okay, we had this Man of Steel movie where he was really deep and emotional and all this, and now he's in a Justice League movie and he's not anymore. His character's not established like that, you know, because there's going to be different directing styles, obviously, but they got to keep that same character that they had in Man of Steel, or else, you know, in the sequels, they're going to, you know, people are going to be like, okay, he wasn't the same guy in Man of Steel that he was in Justice League and the sequel to Man of Steel or whatever.
Yeah.
And you have all these other characters that aren't established at all, that have to have some kind of screen time to develop some kind of personality, or else they're gonna just have, you know, faceless, you know, characters. You know, only the comic book, you know, geeks are going to be the only ones that can appreciate these characters. And the other, you know, just the regular general audience is going to be like, okay, there's some guy named Flash, whatever. We don't really care. We only care about Superman because he's already established.
Exactly. Yeah.
Batman, we care about Batman, whether or not, you know, they care if he's established or not. You know, it could be anybody. If it's JGL, you know, just Gordon-Levitt, if it's him, you know, they'll be like, okay, yeah, we know who he is. We know what kind of character he is. So you already have those characters established. But the rest of them are just like up in the air.
Yeah.
Well, I think, one book that did it that way was the DC, The Final Frontier. It's like you knew who Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman were, but they sort of established who the Flash and Martian Manhunter and Green Lantern. They gave them origin stories in it. But in that, they didn't focus on the villain at all. He was just like a mysterious character that, you know, Darkseid, I don't know if you can do that, you know.
Yeah.
Gonna have to give him his time. I still think they should just release some other individual movies before they do it, but they have their heads up their asses.
Yeah. It's, you know, I can understand, like, doing Darkseid for a sequel. They could establish the character is behind, I mean, it's basically copying the Avengers formula, but it worked.
Yeah.
So why not, you know, just try to stay different and do, just still do that formula. It's been done before, the Avengers. So, you know, you can't just say, okay, it was the Avengers. It's been done before. Just have Darkseid, the real guy behind the, you know, at the end you find out he was the one behind the villain in the first movie, and that everything that happened, the Justice League beating that guy was all part of his plan or something.
We got another one talking about the Man of Steel.
Another one.
Yes, another one. Another one talking about the Man of Steel. And it's just been pretty popular, so to speak, for the past few weeks or so. But it's very possible that Batman could cameo in the Man of Steel as a final scene. Would it be Joseph Gordon-Levitt? You know, I'm a fan of his, you know, but at the same time, I'd be highly disappointed if it was John Robin Blake to be the actual Batman in the actual scene. It'd be a lot more sadness and disappointments all around for myself. I'm pretty sure from you guys as well, and to also of our other listeners too. So at that, what do you guys think about possibly Joseph Gordon-Levitt showing up in the Man of Steel?
No.
Reboot. Yeah.
Hey, you guys, shut up. I want to hear what Sheba has to say.
What? Oh, geez. Yeah, it's unnecessary.
Okay, thank you, Sheba. Hard-hitting stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, I understand this, that they really are trying to get this connected universe, and I do understand, but, and like I said, I love Joseph Gordon-Levitt as an actor. He's fantastic, but really? John Robin Blake at the end of the Man of Steel, or show up at some capacity within the movie, it doesn't really sit well with me at all, you know. And even though his reps are already heavily denying the movie, they're like, oh no, he ain't got time for that movie, he ain't doing it, he ain't showing up. But you never know, like a lot of this denial has happened before in the past and it has came true, and now it's like, do we really want Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Batman?
No. Joseph Gordon Levi's jeans.
Oh man, I'm sorry.
Well, I'm really not a huge DC fan. I mean, I was mostly into Marvel, but I mean, I'm really excited about Man of Steel. But I mean, if they incorporate him into the movie, wouldn't he really have to be established as
I will say this, he's a better Batman than Batman was in the Dark Knight movies. I mean, detective wise.
Yeah, I mean, he did figure out just by looking at his lips and his face, finding out that he was Batman.
It was the DSLs that got him. So, you know,
I remember that part of the movie. That might have been a deleted scene.
It probably was. I know who you are, Bruce Wayne. I could tell by the DSL. When he came back down to the orphanage, I was like, yep, that's what I'm talking about.
Did you guys see the Jonathan Nolan interview where he speaks about that particular thing?
DSL?
The kids. That on comicbooktherapy.com.
Where he says that kids are exceptional at these things and they pick up on little innuendos and then, you know. And I was reading that and I was like, okay, so Blake picked up on it, and what about the other kids? They didn't pick up on it? All the kids in Gotham City know who Batman is.
I think that's a funny thing too, because like, one of my friends, he has said that since the cave itself is actually right under the orphanage, it's like, it's a lineage of Batman's for orphanage. So it's like, all the orphans, all the male orphans could be Batman when it's their time to show up. You know, it's like, since they all know the mantle, they all know the secret, it's like, you're Batman next, little 7-year-old.
So, like, Dark Knight Returns type stuff?
Mantle. Yeah.
What if one of the Batmans decides to do bad?
Then they have to do everything about
that. That was the whole second movie, where they had the copycat Batmans. They were all trying to wearing the hockey pads and stuff, don't you think there's more of those guys?
Would be Batman. He would just be like in some weird suit getting killed immediately. Not Batman.
Well, John Blake would carry a gun, though. He doesn't care. He would. He'd shoot people.
John Blake would be like the Bucky of Captain America, having a gun in his holster.
He would be. And, I mean, it would be fine if that's what it was in the comic books, but it's not.
It's really not. I mean, it's
make a bad Batman, but he'd make an awesome Nightwing.
He would.
They ruined it by not introducing his character as, you know, Dick Grayson. There they could have said, okay, he's going to be Nightwing for Gotham City. I would have been fine with that. I mean, the movie still sucked to me, but,
yeah.
You know, if they had done that, I would have been, okay, that's fine. You take Grayson and codename Nightwing or something, I've been fine with that.
And to have his dude's name to be Robin.
he's an orphan.
Let him go, he's an orphan. It's just hilarious.
I heard Kevin Smith had a good idea for it, where it was, at the end, he should have said, you should use your real name. It sounds good. Terry McGinnis.
Boom.
I was like, that would have kind of made sense. No one would have understood it, but.
Yeah, that would have been a huge mind warp. I would have been like, Terry McGinnis? Holy crap.
Holy balls.
And then we would all know that he was like a clone.
Yeah.
And we would be like, okay, I would be all right with that. Yeah, that would be fine.
Yeah, I'd be more than all right with that. I'd do it. I'm doing my butt.
You would. but going back to the whole, like, Man of Steel thing, I don't think Batman's going to be in it at all.
I don't think he should be.
Who is the one man to have defeated me in freestyle? Yes.
Are they going to be rebooting the whole thing, or?
What else? Had to challenge me?
I'll challenge you, yo. I'll challenge you.
Drop a beat.
Yo, I'll beat this guy to freestyle straight up.
That's right. I'll beat you to the lyrical flow of Bane. I'm Bane, yes, that's my name. You hear the name, Ben, I guarantee the pain. I'm coming after you, Bruce Wayne. I'm stronger, smarter, and clinically insane. I'm Bane, that's my name. Bruce Wayne in the Batman, I'm totally the same. I broke his back, Mortal Kombat Spark. Then I cracked my 28 fruit champagne. Oh, nice hip.
I had Gotham City, it was alright.
Never.
Hey, yes, it's a shame. I declare martial law and you all complain. And now, when you ask why I wear the mask, I'll explain. It's because I'm Bane. Yes, that's my name. You say it to him, what's the name becomes a name. Of course, some think my plan lacks game. You say it to my face, I'll crash your blade. When I say no, you say survival. No. No. When I say no, you say survival.
Suck,
Bane. Who said that? Stop the music.
Bane sucks. He sucks at freestyling.
Sorry. That was like old. That was kind of old school rap, though.
It was. That was like the 80s rap.
Yeah.
Like the ABC's 1, 2, 3 kind of rhyme scheme.
That was weak sauce.
I'm going to leave that on the podcast.
Oh, I'm a murder Bane in a freestyle, son. No, but
we'll find out our Christmas episode. With your rebuttal to Bane's rap.
Maybe Tyrone will be able to spit up a different rap.
All hail the mighty Sheba.
All right, everyone, here comes to a very special segment called As Seen by Sheba. go ahead, take it away, Sheba. What movie have you seen recently? And it's, of course, it's a big blockbuster and a sort of a new trilogy.
Oh, but yes. The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey, part 1 of 3. Yes, I saw the midnight release. Loved it. I read the book when I was younger. So, I would say it's pretty true to the book. I mean, I've read a lot of reviews. Rotten Tomatoes didn't really favorite that much. I don't know, it was like 63%. I mean, I think it's really for the hardcore fans of the book, if you know your characters and storyline. As for actors, the Martin Freeman as Bilbo, I thought was perfect. I mean, he was spot on. And Thorin, it was Richard Armitage. I thought he was really, really well for his character. Yeah, I mean, in general, I thought it was really, really, really enjoyable. Great cinematography. I mean, I know they added some aspects from other books and, like, side notes to the story just to kind of give it more depth. But no, I'm really looking forward to the other sequels, just because they're getting Evangeline Lilly in as Tauriel, which is pretty exciting because I don't really talk too much about her in the book. But
what was your favorite part of the movie?
My favorite part, probably the introduction to the dwarves, which was, like, scene by scene, it was a book, so it was, that was probably my favorite.
Okay, what was your least favorite?
The ending, you know, when the Great Eagles, they take all the dwarves and Gandalf and Bilbo, and they just drop them off at that point, and then, you know, there's gonna be a bunch of people in the theater gonna be like, why couldn't they drop them off close?
Yeah, if they read the book, they would understand that the Eagles are their own race, and they don't just do whatever people say. They can, you know, they have their own king and all that stuff, and people, I guess, average moviegoers don't understand that. But I think in the second movie, they'll pick up where, you know, Gandalf will talk to the Eagle King and stuff like that, because they have to get off that mountain, I guess. But
And I think that's, because I know on Internet Movie Database, they've got Cumberbatch listed as the Necromancer, so that should be pretty damn exciting for the...
So he's doing dual roles in that one?
He's
doing Smaug and the Necromancer?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm agreeing with Sheba on this. I read that on IMDb yesterday, and also a few of the dwarves were actually the three trolls. They did the voices for the trolls.
Yeah, I could see that. Mm-hmm.
Kind of like what John Rhys-Davies did with Treebeard and Gimli.
Yeah. Okay, that's cool. Yeah, I guess they're going to expand a whole lot on the Necromancer, because they didn't really mention it in the book until, you know, Gandalf came back at the end. So, I mean, honestly, I'm glad, because, you know, it just... Three movies is awesome for me. I get to go to the theaters two more times. See awesome, you know, Hobbit movie. So, you know, for them to expand on that role, because, you know, it basically just happened outside of the story, and then, you know, it just picks up. You know, it's fine with me that, you know, it wasn't in the book, but it was mentioned, and they can expand on that. You know, it's fine.
Yeah.
I had no problem with that. I know some people were like, okay, what's this Necromancer stuff? You know, I was like, okay, it might have one age in the book, but okay, like, they can expand on it too.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people were expecting The Lord of the Rings, but, I mean, The Hobbit was a children's book, but, I mean, it's definitely a lot scarier than it could have been.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't let anybody under, I guess, 10 see it, but basically because, you know, there's the arm chopping off. It was a little, some scenes were a little bit scary for kids, but... Yeah, I mean, my kids would be tough anyways. I won't care that you're like 1 year old, you know.
They're like badasses.
Yeah, little badasses. They wouldn't. Yeah, it'd be fine. Yeah.
I will agree with Sheba on the, like I said earlier in the week whenever I first saw it, you know, it's not Lord of the Rings, but that's a good thing. This one was, I know Lord of the Rings had its elements where it was just lighthearted and at times it was funny, but this one was lighthearted and funny the entire way through. And
I agree. I love that part of it.
Just seeing Bilbo interact with the 12 other dwarves and Gandalf trying to corral everybody together. And just seeing that first interaction between Bilbo and Gandalf with the good morning, that just set the tone for the rest of the movie.
Yes.
And going along with what Sheba said after she had seen it, it didn't feel long enough to me. At the end of the movie, I was wanting more. And yesterday I watched the Lord of the Rings movies, and I was just wishing it was The Hobbit the entire day.
Yeah, I feel the same exact way, man. I feel the same way.
I also really, really liked the scene between Bilbo and Gollum.
Oh.
I mean, a lot of people in the audience were really, like, they thought it was, like, comical. In some parts it was, but I felt like it really delved really deep into Gollum's character. I mean, he's really interesting, but, I mean, you really get to see that part of him.
The scene where Bilbo decided not to kill him.
He saw the hurt
in his eyes, and that was just a strong
scene.
Heartbreaking. It really was. I felt for Gollum right then. It was really an awesome scene.
That also brings into play with what Gandalf said in Fellowship of the Ring. It was pity that stained Bilbo's hand, because had he killed Gollum, then none of the events in The Two Towers or Return of the King would have happened. So Gollum did have an integral part to play in all of it.
Yep.
No, I can't remember do they recap on Gollum's story in The Lord of the Rings, the films?
Yeah, Two Towers. I think the first of it was about him, the other guy finds the ring and then he kills the dude and Smaug, yeah.
It was beginning of Return of the King.
Oh, Return of the King. My bad.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. But I thought maybe they would have done something like that in The Hobbit, too.
I think he was a lot creepier in The Hobbit, too.
He really was.
There was just that, it was very touching whenever he was, you could see that he was obviously possessed by the ring whenever Bilbo went to kill him. And he just saw that look in his eyes. But for that, it was just, we had never seen Gollum before wanting to eat, a fellow hobbit, even though he doesn't claim to be a hobbit anymore. Because with Frodo and Sam, it was always like he just wanted the ring, he just wanted to kill them and be done with it. He never wanted to eat them.
And he's completely forgotten that he used to be. Is it in 3D or 48 frames per second?
I don't care about 3D, period. If it's cheap, I'll go see it, but, I'm not going to pay, $13.50 for that on 3D when I have glasses and they don't fit over my glasses. It's my main problem. I have, one contact right now.
I wanted to go see it in 3D, but, Kit Teeth is not a fan of 3D, so I think I'll wait to go see it in 3D. I just want to say 3D one more time.
Well, 3D. Let us know, man, because I want to know. I don't know anybody that has seen it in 3D, so I really do want to know, just in case I do want to see it before it's gone.
I'm curious about the 48 frames, but I think some site had tried to do the trailer in that style, and it was very odd. Like, my eyes couldn't really, adjust to it. I don't know, it's very, very weird.
I've seen the TVs at Walmart.
Yeah.
They always show the Grinch, and I don't like to see the Grinch where he looks like he's, I don't know how to explain it. It just looks real, or I don't know how to explain it, but it doesn't look right. I like the silver.
It's like watching Schindler's List, but as a reality TV show.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not trying to make fun of it, but that's what it reminds me of. It's like trying to watch a really dramatic, hard-hitting movie, yet it's moving at the speed of Honey Boo Boo.
That's a great way to put it. I couldn't put it better. But, I mean, Peter Jackson insists that people go see it in 3D at 48. Frames per second.
And I honestly would love to go see the sprawling Australian landscapes in three dimensions. That would just, visually, the movie was gorgeous, and just adding another dimension to it would just completely blow my mind whole.
Yeah. I mean, the last movie I saw in 3D was Avengers in IMAX. And I wasn't, I really didn't like it in 3D at all. There was enough scene. I mean, there's a couple scenes in the Hobbit where it would have been awesome to see in 3D, but, yeah.
The Eagles, that battle for, I think,
with
Moria.
The whole goblin chase scene.
Oh, pretty much everything in that movie where there was a big epic battle would have been awesome in 3D.
Which was like every 10 minutes, which
was
awesome.
It was way more action-packed than I thought it'd be. Like, I read the first couple pages of the book, and I'm just like, I can't get into it. I cannot get into this. And then going to see the movie, I'm just like, well, now I kind of want to finish the book to see what happens.
Yeah, the book gets really good. It's unlike The Lord of the Rings, and they're so opposite the way they start out and end. It's just, it's insane how different they are, because it's like reading a history book. You have to go through all this to even get to the good parts in the Lord of the Rings book when you're reading it. And The Hobbit, man, like, you're just like going to through each section. You're like, oh crap, man, here's another thing they're having to walk into. Here's another one. And it's like the movie played out like how I imagined it when I was reading the book. And it expanded on it. I mean, like, some of the action scenes were just, I was like, man, I didn't even imagine this is the way. It was a little bit, you know, crappy in my head. So I saw, like, Peter Jackson's got an awesome vision of it.
Well, and one of the quotes in the film was, out of the frying pan and into the fire. And I thought that absolutely nailed it perfectly, because they had just gotten done fighting off all of those freaking goblins, and then here comes the pale orc and the wargs and the other orcs, and it was just, it was one thing after another, and I honestly could not have asked for a better movie-going experience, other than having Wild Cherry Pepsi all over my jeans.
I think one thing my girlfriend didn't like was that they changed the character designs for the wargs and some of the goblins or something, which I don't remember goblins in The Lord of the Rings. So, you know, I think, you know, Peter Jackson kept all Guillermo del Toro's designs. He kept all of his designs for this.
You know, and I noticed that a lot, too. The Goblin King looked exactly like one of the characters that you would see in the troll market in Hellboy 2.
Mm-hmm. The ball chant, the ball, like...
Yeah.
My girlfriend didn't like all that. She's like, I don't like designs. I was like, well, they're all different.
Yeah.
Whatever.
That was pretty good.
I liked it. It was fine.
I mean, I read some stuff from, like, fan reviews saying that The Hobbit's really not necessary because prequels don't always work. You know, case in point, like, Star Wars, you know, comparing it to the prequels.
We'll get titty started.
But this is different. Because, I mean, it's part of, you know, Middle Earth history, so, I mean, it had to have been made.
Well, you're keeping the same directors, for one thing, the same writers, you know, the same actors that had something to do with it. You know, it couldn't go wrong. I saw no way it could have went wrong. You know, the same locations, the same, everything, the whole crew was the same. Basically, and they just added all these awesome actors with it, with all the, you know, the dwarves. I liked every bit of it, you know.
Yeah.
It really was. I couldn't have, if I die tomorrow, you know, I saw the greatest movie, you know, it would have, I've been fine if I died
it's like
Friday.
Early Christmas every year.
Mm-hmm. And we get to see it next Christmas, the sequel, so awesome. We get to talk about it next year this time.
With The Hobbit, you don't have technology that is way more advanced than the original trilogy. With The Hobbit, it's the same. It is the same all the way through, and that's that.
Why would that piss fans off, though? Like, I mean, well, if they're made well...
Yeah, if there's not wooden acting, and if, you know, the director or the creator went through and screwed pretty much everything except for the evolution of one of the greatest characters of all time up, then there's really nothing to complain about. I don't know why all these people are bashing on The Hobbit. You know, right. it may not have been a necessary movie, but we got it, and a majority of the people are very, very thrilled about it.
I do want to say, I haven't read any of the reviews or anything, because I base it on my judgment, and then I don't care about anybody else's opinion. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to bashing the movie, you know, I saw something about Radagast. They were like, oh, he was unnecessary. Dude, he was one of the best parts of the movie, man. He had bird crap on the side of his head.
Exactly.
And I was laughing. I was, like, laughing. I was like, oh, my God, he's got bird crap, dude. I was laughing so hard at this part.
Let's see Lady Gaga pull that off.
The scene with the little hedgehog. Dude, I almost started crying, dude, when that thing died. I was like, oh, my God, this is a heart-wrenching scene. And then I was all happy, and stuff when they brought him back. I was like, oh, my God, yes. You know, I don't really get into movies like that. Me and my girlfriend were, like, really into this movie, you know. I don't, like, cheer along with it or anything. And, you know, for a movie to get me excited to feel like I'm a child again is an awesome movie. Like, that's a, you know, it gets 100 in my Rotten Tomato score here.
But I wasn't expecting something that hard hitting, you know. I was excited about The Hobbit, but I wasn't as excited about it as I was, you know, The Avengers or Batman, which was a real letdown. And, you know, just going back to see The Phantom Menace in movie theaters this past February, I know, I suck at life, but just seeing that Star Wars sprawl on the screen just took me back to, you know, being 13 years old, sitting in a movie theater with my dad again. And that, you know, I think we need more movies like that, more movies that remind us of our childhood, because honestly, with everything that's been going on in the world, we need this now more than ever.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree.
It's time to talk about Arrow.
All right, y'all, for our next topic of the podcast, we're going to discuss the ever-increasingly good show, I guess, Arrow. And we're going to discuss what is mid-season finale.
All right, before we begin, can you do a recap of the video for me? Because, I mean, the episode for me, because I watched it, like, last week. I just can't remember.
Dark Archer, my friend.
Dark Archer, okay, I got it.
Yeah, remember now?
You mean African-American Archer?
Merlin, really. Yeah. We were tricked up. We didn't know it was Merlin. Okay, let's start.
Eddie Marlin.
With Year's End, it was a pretty good, I guess I could say it was a pretty good season, mid-season finale at that, for the actual show. The show, by episode, has been increasingly getting a little bit better as far as story-wise and set pieces. And, of course, with this episode, it introduced Dark Arrow. Now, for some of y'all that have been able to really see this episode, I'll go ahead and start off with you, Pedro, since you definitely have seen it. What did you think about the episode?
First off, I didn't get the feeling that it was a mid-season finale. I went in to watch the episode without even realizing it was a mid-season finale. So by the end of the episode, the feeling I had was that it was the best episode of the season so far. I mean, we've been talking about it on the podcast quite frequently, and we have been a bit harsh with Arrow, and, you know, with reason. But I think that this past episode was really what all the episodes of Arrow need to be from now on, you know. And then you have a big episode for the finale or the mid-season finale, because in terms of pacing, even dialogue, I would say acting wise and dialogue, I think it was the best so far. It was not without its ups and downs at certain points, but it was the best so far in my opinion.
I like how, you know, it really showed the struggle that Ollie has between trying to have this persona for his family. Because, you know, he's trying to, after all these years of being gone, 5 years, you know, they didn't have a Christmas, basically. So he's trying to bring some kind of hope, I guess, that maybe the old Ollie's returned a little bit.
Yeah.
And so he's bringing the, you know, Christmas back to the family, and then, you know, really struggling to keep that life separate from his Arrow persona. And, you know, they mentioned, you know, maybe he should have a name or something other than Archer. Or, I mean, Arrow or whatever. At the dinner table.
What everyone's been saying.
Yeah, and the guy was like, Green Arrow. And then Ollie was like, oh, that's lame. I was like, oh, man, what the heck, man? Call him Green Arrow, for God's sake, please. Don't change everything about the show. But, you know, I was really surprised because I didn't really know the Archer, who he was, you know. I was surprised because, you know, I had read earlier, you know, predictions that, you know, the Merlin, you know, Tommy Merlin, okay, that was his friend. And they were like, well, we don't know what he's going to do. But, you know, I didn't expect the dad at all. And, you know, I really didn't think he would be the Archer.
It was a bit of a curveball for us. Because
it was.
As far as I'm concerned, I was thinking Tommy would be the Dark Archer and not, Danny Merlin.
I don't know.
But, I mean, I suppose that, you know, since the introduction of Danny Merlin in episode whatever, and it was John Barrowman, you kind of hope that John Barrowman has this greater role, not just every couple of episodes show up, oh, I'm your daddy now, you don't have any money, blah, 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 and then goes off for five or six episodes and then picks up again, hello, I'm still your daddy and you still don't have any money, da-da-da-da-da-da. So it was a bit expected, I suppose, in terms of John Merriman having a larger part. And we're lucky enough to have him as Dark Archer, which I think, you know, I said on the last couple of episodes of the podcast that I find Merriman really creepy at points. In Arrow so far. When he was doing that run he did in the Desperate Housewives, I think. Some of the previews that I've seen, because I like the guy's work since Torchwood, I like him very much. But in Arrow, creepy. In Desperate Housewives, as far as I know, because I haven't seen it, but as far as I've seen from the previews, very creepy as well. So I think it would be a perfect fit. I think it will be a perfect fit.
Yeah, I kept thinking, though. Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, it was funny because I remember watching an episode before when they had like the big reveal that John Barrowman was actually the father of, you know, Tommy Merlin. And my dad was like, my dad was there with me while I was watching the episode. He was like, what is this? I was like, well, it's Arrow. And he was like, what's going on? So I'm sitting there giving my dad the full rundown and I'm letting him know like the episode is going on. And he was like, what, he's the dad of him? I was like, yeah. He said, that man looks younger than him. I was like, you know, my dad, I started laughing. He said, he got some good jeans. He goes, yeah, he ain't got no jeans since he's in a fencing outfit, but geez, he goes, he look younger than him.
What are the odds that the special skill that, I guess, John Barman, the Daddy Merlin has, you know, is archery, the same as Arrow. Like, I was thinking, you know, this is a little too coincidental here. You know, so I'm thinking maybe that the guy that teaches Ollie how to, you know, archery has something to do with Daddy Merlin. You know,
well,
I kept thinking
criminal,
that.
But he was a criminal, according to the other military.
Okay, but yeah, he might have something to do with that island. Maybe he, you know, because they had the soldiers killing off all the prisoners on the island, so maybe that John Barman's character had, maybe he was like the guy behind it, the idea man, the one that put it in motion. And, you know, I'm pretty sure soon, I guess they're bringing in, Slade or Deathstroke in here, so you know, I'm like, every time I see him, dude, I get like get a little giddy because he's awesome.
Bring him where?
Bring him to Starling City.
Why?
Because he's awesome.
But that kind of negates the first episode of Arrow where you see his mask with a arrow through the eye.
Well, I didn't see all of them. Yeah, it doesn't mean he's dead because he's Slade, dude.
I suppose not.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, he's in the comics. He's missing one eye, right? And I think probably maybe Ollie did it to him at some point, or
yeah,
Could be, yeah, could be.
Well, remember one comic where Slade was fighting the whole Justice League? I think it was Identity Crisis. Yeah. And Ollie just jumps on his back and stabs him right in the eye with an arrow. Pretty badass.
Maybe we'll see that in the show. That'd be pretty awesome.
Yeah. Well, the guy that's playing him with Slade, playing Slade, is awesome anyways. You know, he's built like a brick house. You know, he's on Spartacus.
That's true.
So, you know, I mean, definitely it's going to be kind of cool to see him because, you know, the guy that plays Ollie is freaking built anyways himself. Like, there's always like a gratuitous scene where he's working out for the ladies.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, you're going to have both these dudes, you know they're going to both take shirts off and fight each other at one point.
That's what yeah. Kitty likes.
Yeah, Kitty likes that.
Show enough.
But yeah, I enjoyed seeing Ollie get schooled this episode.
I'm just glad Slade isn't wearing that half orange, half blue, half Buccaneer boots chainmail monstrosity costume they have him in the comics.
Yeah. I do like the armor that they're starting to try to have for him and everything. I think that's really cool. Alright guys, now we go into our final topic of the podcast. A pretty massive and gorgeous looking trailer was released. And that trailer in question was indeed Pacific Rim. I don't know about you, but I kind of felt like just was hearing a narrative and seeing the characters. It's like, whoa, Jax left the Sons of Anarchy to join the synchronized Gundam suit to battle monsters. You know, and also in relation, I kind of felt like it was also just a mix of Power Rangers as well. You know,
well,
but
comparisons, they're going to be there. Whether you like it or not, it's
exactly.
Robots and monsters. So, you know, you. I'm sure Del Toro was expecting that at some point. Quite sure, because there's no way you could have run away from it.
There's no way.
But having said that, I think it looks amazing.
It does.
I think
agree.
The whole trailer looks absolutely amazing. I think it could be a huge blockbuster. I mean, we don't know the how the story unfolds, you know, apart from the little bit that we know that there's a an old Gundam that they're going to use and blah, blah, blah. But I think from those couple of images and from the virals and everything, I think it looks amazing.
Thing is, like, it's like reminiscent of the games that I used to play when I was growing up, like, you know, Rampage and,
yeah.
You know, it looks like it's going to be great and a lot of fun. And
I'm definitely
looking forward to it and, like my body is ready for it, but Teddy, yeah. when you saw this trailer, what was your initial thoughts after this video?
It was like Godzilla versus Transformers with Voltron and Power Rangers thrown in there for good measure. the monster looks amazing. Del Toro definitely has a good track record with the makeup jobs that he does for the supernatural characters that he works with. Other like the mechs, I don't know. They look like something. I don't know. I'm trying to think right now. It's like Lost in Space, the remake of Lost in Space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whenever the little kid was actually in the robot hologram.
Yeah.
That's what the guys in the suits kind of reminded me of, because I know that they're essentially driving the suits with all of their body motions and they're hooked up to everything, but it's pretty much just like what I said earlier, Transformers meets Godzilla with a little bit of Cloverfield and Power Rangers and Voltron thrown in.
I say if he found a way to mix all that and make it look good and interesting on the screen, props to the guy, kudos, let him do it. the thing that bothers me most is that, well, it doesn't bother me, but concerns me, is that there was a point, I think it was when they, halfway through the filming, I mean, they were using the Red Epic cameras but they didn't want to shoot or convert the film to 3D, so they didn't film it in 3D, but afterwards, they just went ahead with the conversion. That's what's bugging me the most, and I hope on a big screen it will translate well, because if I can remember what Del Toro said, I think it was that because the most of the images are so big and the monsters are so big and the robots are so big that you don't realize the 3D is there because everything on the screen is big. But then, I think it was something akin to that. But then, later on, he said he changed his mind. And I think, okay. It was a perfectly good explanation to not to use 3D. You know, I can relate to that. But now we're going to convert it. Okay, well, I hope it's worth it. Bloody hell.
Maybe he was being pushed by the studios to go ahead and just
convert. I hope not, man. I hope not. Because
it'll still be good without 3D, Pedro. It's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Oh no, absolutely. But it will be a shame because nowadays with all the 3D gimmicks and movies pushing for studios pushing for the 3D, most movies tend to lose a lot from the 3D. I mean, I saw Clash of the Titans 2D and then 3D.
Oh.
I didn't like the 3D. I thought it took a lot from the movie. But in 2D, it was quite enjoyable. You know, it was quite entertainable. But the 3D, it just messed with my head at points. That's just an example.
When I saw the trailer, you know, my first thought was War of Monsters on PS2.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That was my first thought. And, yeah, I just think it's gonna be a fun movie. I ain't putting too much thought into it. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all I have to say about that.
Definitely.
Yeah,
Godzilla meets the Avatar and screw the story.
Yeah, I don't really even think that they need 3D because there's gonna be so much going on the screen. It's gonna
be
hard to take in all of
it. That's it. That's it. Remember, good lord.
Transformers,
yeah, the second one.
Yeah.
Optimus died.
So hard to watch.
The forest battle, yeah, where Optimus died. And I was just confused by all the movement and thing because the camera was so close to the action. And I suppose, I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad thing being close to the action and you know, filming it up close. But it's just, when you have big, massive things on the screen, it just confuses a bit.
Yeah, you couldn't tell the robots apart at that point.
Yeah.
No.
You couldn't tell them apart in 2D either, though.
Oh,
especially with that freaking movie.
Shut up, Witty, you could do.
I didn't even get 3D, but yeah, in 2D, dude, I couldn't tell what the heck was going on in half the battles. Unless they slowed it down and went back, and where I could actually see them throw haymakers and such, but, you know, it was just parts like that where they're really going fast and they zoom in, you can't really tell them apart. You know, in this movie, though, you know, they're going to be robots and monsters, so it's gonna be easy to tell who's who, and all the robots look different. And from the trailer, it looks like even the robots are gonna go through an evolution of change.
Yeah,
they're really crappy at first, you know, and then they're gonna get a lot better and better.
It's like Real Steel in reverse.
Yeah, I don't remember why.
It's perfect. Like, there, you're right, exactly what it is.
I don't remember where I read it, but Del Toro was quoted saying that there's at least half a dozen different monsters in the movie, all made up and, you know, fully detailed and all of that. I can't remember where I saw that.
I hope that they don't do a whole lot of the shaky cam because, I said, the monster is kind of reminiscent of Cloverfield, the one that.
Yeah,
I think it's at the end whenever they're fighting over the bridge or whatever.
Yeah.
And with Cloverfield, you didn't actually get a good glimpse of the thing until the very end. And I don't feel like, you know, in order to induce terror, it should be like that. I don't feel like that at all. In order to induce terror, you need to see the whole beast in its entirety without the camera wobbling around and everything like that and making everybody sick.
You know, in all honesty, even with like Cloverfield, like I was, what drew me to the movie was the fact that even within the trailers, they weren't revealing exactly what the monster looked like and what it was. And I was like, that would terrify me, especially the unseen. That's what drew me into it. Cause I was like, I never knew what it looked like. I was like, whoa, like what could it be that is completely, you know, just terrorizing the city? That's completely just like decimating everybody, just taking lives left and right. And then of course with the whole shaky cam watching the movie, like I'm glad I did not sit in the front seat,
yeah,
watching Cloverfield, because yeah, I probably would have threw up on somebody, yeah, you know. And
I had to have my ex-girlfriend drive home because I could not. my stomach was so unsettled after that. I was just, I wasn't right for 2 days afterwards.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying about the 3D gimmick. Now, if you put all that together, and now you mentioned that in 3D, you know, it's just, no one is going to sit on the front seat. No one. Because it would just be a mess. A giant mess of you know, messiness.
I mean, it'd be awesome to go see it in IMAX, but you don't need to add that extra dimension with stuff that there's...
No. In IMAX, I bet it would look fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
If it was at 48 frames per second, you would throw
it. It'd be like I was already there. It'd be like I was fighting in the war with the monsters. Oh, man, I'd be tapping like a mofo.
Do what Robert Rodriguez did with Spy Kids 4D and give out these little cards to the kids. I don't know if you guys knew this, but they gave out little cards to, you know, every session. If you went to go and see the movie, and there were specific moments in the Spy Kids 4D that you had to, there were like five or six slots on the cards. And
yeah.
At specific moments in the movie, you had to scratch one of the cards and then smell it. And so it would make you feel, supposedly, that you were, you know. So if there was an explosion, you had to scratch that card, smell it, and it would smell like gunpowder or something like that.
Like 4D.
Yeah.
Like they did at the Spider-Man ride in Universal Studios, the best ride in the world.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah, that's freaking awesome.
Yeah. So everyone had these little cards, so they can do that with the Pacific Rim as well. Whenever a robot farts, they could just.
It smells like diesel.
That's nasty.
Somebody's not using unleaded.
Well, listeners, that's all the time that we have for today. Don't forget to add Comic Book Therapy on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Comic B Therapy. Please be kind to leave any feedback about today's show. And also, what we do have that's just new is our Weekly Dose Twitter account. So if there's anything else you'd like to do, anything you'd like to send to us, even if you just want to be able to talk to us or you want to stalk us, contact us at the_weeklydose. Any questions or concerns regarding to the podcast, or you want to go ahead and just drink along with us and just have a great time and blast and even party with Paula Deen, you can also follow the Weekly Dose team on Twitter. We are at The Wolverine, at Marty2Fly, at WolverinePT, at NCrub1986, and at Muy Mariano. Weedy doesn't have a Twitter, so if you want to be able to reach him, just go to a cornfield. And
I can be contacted at Geek Boy Movies.
Especially if you have any requests. We'll pass it along to Witty.
If you want any naked pictures, ask for Josh at geekboymovies.com.
That is true. Right, Queen doesn't get a hold of it, otherwise Witty is in trouble.
Very much so. Be careful, be nonchalant, and make sure you're very covered with it as well, too. Thank you all for listening. That was Weekly Dose.
Weekly Dose.
And that was definitely... our episode
at _weeklydose on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. www.comicbooktherapy.com.
Boom. And this was episode 13, Monsters versus Super Doze Tenkaichi Elite Team Go!
Five, four, three, two,
engage.
Weekly Dose, prescribed by Comic Book Therapy.